So as we begin, we entered into the month of Nisan just a number of days ago. Over the next few minutes, we'll try to understand what this month is all about, the Torah behind this month, the psychology behind this month, the Yom Tov that appears in this month, maybe some takeaways. So the Gemara Masechet Ta'anit, Daf Chavtet, tells us, famous Gemara, Rav Yehuda bar Eder of Shmuel bar Shilat Mishmei Derav Keshem Shemichnas Av Mematin B'Simcha. The same way, when we enter into the month of Av, we're supposed to decrease in our level of happiness. Kach, so too, Mishenichnas Adar Marbi B'Simcha. So too, when we enter into the month of Adar, we're supposed to increase in our happiness. And Rashi points out right then and there, Mishenichnas Adar, Rashi says, Yemei Nisim Hayu LeYisrael, there are days filled with miracles for the Jewish people, Purim uPesach. Purim and Pesach. Wow, unbelievable. Right? This Gemara is one of the most often quoted ones when it comes to Purim and the month of Adar and the like. However, Rashi throws in a nice word over here, and he says that these are days of miracles for the Jewish people, Purim and Pesach. Amazing. Based on this Rashi, there's a special inyan of simcha, of happiness in the month of Nisan, as well as it includes days of miracles that were above the laws of nature. Very interesting. Let's try to understand what exactly took place in this month, the month of Nisan. Try to identify this level of simcha that we can tap into specifically in this month. So let's jump straight into the Haggadah. Let's dive into the Haggadah and learn more about the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim, which is actually the main event of the month of Nisan. The section of Magid begins with the famous four questions. We know the four questions. Shebechol HaLelot, on all their nights, we eat chametz and matzah. On this night, we only eat matzah. Second question, all the nights we eat other vegetables. Tonight, only maror. All the nights, we don't even dip one time. Tonight we dip two times. All of the nights we sit, we lean. Tonight we lean. Says the Abarbanel, unbelievable commentary. The Abarbanel comments and he says that these four questions can be summed up into one question. And what's that one question? The question of the night, and this is really the theme of the Leila Seder, is why is it that we act like slaves and like kings on the same night? Why is it that we're displaying signs of slavery? Parenthetically, that points to two of the questions. Why is it that tonight we eat matzah? Matzah is called lechem oni, a poor man's bread. And we also eat maror, which reminds us of the slavery. So why is it that we act like slaves, matzah and maror? And we also act like free men. We dip two times like fancy people do. We lean like kings. Why are we acting like slaves and kings on the same night? And the Abarbanel says that is really the one question, the one theme of the Leila Seder. The rest of the Haggadah is meant to answer this one question. And the answer could be found in the following paragraph. Avadim ayinu leparo b'mitzrayim. We were slaves to Paro in Egypt. Vayotzienu Hashem Elokeinu misham miyad chazakav is one tuyan. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. With his mighty arm. Says the Abarbanel, it's because in one moment we were slaves, and in the next we were free. That's why we display signs of slavery. We act like slaves and also like kings. Because it all happened, it all changed drastically in a matter of seconds, in a miraculous and supernatural way. And in order to fully experience and appreciate this miracle, we need to act both like slaves and like free men, and like kings. And this, perhaps, is the simcha of Pesach, and the simcha, the happiness of the month of Nisan, going from this place of intense slavery to a status of freedom, of royalty. Let's understand these two terms, slavery and freedom. What do they mean exactly on a deeper level? So we know that in Mitzrayim, the Jews were enslaved. They were what's called mishubadim. They were avadim. They were slaves. They were enslaved in Mitzrayim, both physically and spiritually. The Sfarim point out that the name Mitzrayim, they were enslaved by Mitzrayim. The name Mitzrayim comes from the word Meitzar. Meitzar means a boundary, means borders, means that you're not able to move to the right or to the left, and does not allow you to move forward, does not allow you to grow. The Yalkut Shimoni says that no slave has ever succeeded, before Am Yisrael of course, has ever succeeded in escaping Mitzrayim, because it was a Meitzar, it was a boundary. It locked you off from the rest of the world. Slavery, freedom. There's one word that separates between one who we can say is enslaved and one who we can call free. That one word is control. The ability to take control of your own life and not to be controlled by anyone else or by anything else is how we define someone who is free. On the contrary, someone who is a slave or enslaved is someone who is controlled by something else or someone else and is not able to do what he wants to do when he wants to do it. Says Rav Tzadok HaKohen from Lublin, in Mitzrayim, we were not only enslaved physically, we were also enslaved spiritually. There was a certain level of self-control that we did not have in Mitzrayim. Slavery and freedom. Let's switch gears for a second and move from the Torah to the psychology. This concept of having or not having control of oneself is heavily discussed in psychology, specifically in the form of addictions. Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky, the Gadol, tells over a story about a young man who underwent treatment for a very severe drug problem. At his first Pesach Seder, at home with his father began reciting the Haggadah. He began saying, "Avadim ayinu leparo b'mitzrayim," that Am Yisrael, the Jewish nation, we were once slaves to Paro in Egypt. The young man interrupted his father and he says, "Hold on. When were you ever a slave that you're saying we were once slaves? I can relate to having been a slave," says the son. "I was a slave to drugs. I had no choice whether to use them or not to use them. I did things in my addiction that I swore I would never do, because a slave must do as he is told. I not only used drugs when I liked them, but I even used some drugs whose effect I hated. If there was ever a slave in the world," says the son, "it was me. I know what it means to be a slave, and I know what it means to be free." Rabbi Twersky, in his book, continues to say that this young man's description of being enslaved by drugs is just one example of the slavery of addiction. However, drugs are not the only contributing factor, not the only taskmaster to which people may be the subject. Says Rabbi Twersky, there are people who never use drugs, but are nevertheless slaves to money, to power, to food, to honor, and to technology. In short, anyone who loses control over any kind of behavior, says Rabbi Twersky, is a slave. Addicts, people who are addicted, may say things along the lines of, "I can stop whenever I want, I'm not addicted." Or, "It's fine, I know when I'm doing it for a reason, it calms me down." Or, "I'm better at performing certain tasks when I drink or when I smoke." Or, "I can still function normally, it's not really affecting me. I'm working a job, I'm going to my classes, I'm doing well in my classes." In the famous program for alcoholics, Alcoholics Anonymous, in the 12-step program, the first step, it's called the 12 steps to sobriety, the 12 steps that alcoholics take on their journey to becoming sober. The first step, step number one, is I'm going to read you, quote, a person must reach this level of, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. That means we had no power over our alcohol addictions, and that our lives had become unmanageable. That's the first step, to admit, not to deny. Denial that you even have a problem is the biggest part of the problem. It is just as true when it comes to certain aspects of our lives, not only drugs. Are you controlling those tendencies that you have? Or are they controlling you? The Maharal Miprag tells us what separates between someone who is enslaved and someone who is royal, someone who is like a king. And he says, it's all in his mind. He says there are three contributing factors to a person's decision making. He says there is the mind, the intellect, which is the moach, and there is the heart, the emotions. Sometimes we let our emotions get the best of us, which is called the lev. And then there is the temptations, the desires, which is attributed to the kaved, to the liver, which is attributed to physical temptations. Says the Maharal, if your intellect rules over your emotions and your desires, then you are a true melech, you're a true king. Hence those three words, moach, lev, and kaved. If the moach, the intellect, is all the way in the beginning, then you're a melech. Moach, lev, kaved, the first letter of each of those words spells out melech, spells out king. Says the Maharal, however, if you allow for your temptations and your emotions to dominate your intellect, and you display no self-control over your life, then you flip that word upside down, backwards, read it backwards, melech is klum, nothing, because you're going to be nothing, not going to accomplish a single thing in your life. So we define slavery, and we explained how humans can be enslaved nowadays, even if not in a physical way. As we said, slavery and freedom can also be, as the Maharal showed us, can also be a state of mind. And by channeling and controlling your mind, you can be in control of your emotions and of your temptations as well. I'm sure that you've all heard of this famous character, whose name is Viktor Frankl. So raise your hands, who heard of him? Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl is a European Jew who survived the horrors of Nazi Germany in the concentration camps. He came out of the camps, survived, and developed, became a psychologist and a psychiatrist. He developed what's called logotherapy. It's a form of therapy that's even used today. It's a form of psychotherapy that focuses on meaning, purpose, and uses those two things, meaning and purpose, and shows that those things can overpower any hardships that a person has in life. And he used it on himself in the concentration camps. He saw that people who had meaning and people who had purpose, they had what to live for. They were able to survive and to endure the worst of horrors in the concentration camps. But ones who did not have any meaning, no purpose in life, were miserable. Just to give you a quote to sum up this concept from Viktor Frankl, from his book, says as follows, everything can be taken away from man, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. That is a freedom that can never be taken away from a human being. And that one can be subject to the worst, that a person can be subject to the worst possible hardships, but he can still keep a smile on his face because he is allowing his mind to rule over the rest of his being. Perhaps this is a pshat and a very puzzling line that we say every single night in Arvit. We say in Ve'emunah Kol Zot, after Kriyat Shema, it says, "Vayotzi et amo Yisrael mitocham," that Hashem took the Bnei Yisrael out of Egypt, "lecherut olam," to an eternal freedom. What does that mean, an eternal freedom? There's so many hardships and exiles that Am Yisrael was subject to after Mitzrayim, too many to count, unfortunately. Freedom? We are far from free. An eternal freedom? I don't think so. What's the pshat? Hashem took us out for what's called an eternal freedom. So maybe we can say that maybe from that point on, from Yetziat Mitzrayim, we were given the ability to tune out, to zone out of any hardships, and focus on spirituality, focus on purpose, focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on Hashem. As is famously quoted in the name of the Baal Shem Tov by all of his students, you are where your mind is. Frankl goes on to say, Viktor Frankl goes on to say that this can only happen when one is open to the concept of spirituality. Only when you're open to the concept of spirituality, of a higher power, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of a God, and you live with purpose, with meaning, can you tap into that. And so until now, we're primarily discussing slavery, freedom. We gave definitions. We summed it up in one word, control. A slave is someone who does not have control. A free man is someone who has control. And that if a person is in control of himself, then we can call him a free man. The funny thing is that as an Orthodox Jew, right, that as Orthodox Jews that follow the Torah and all of its details, think about it. There's so many rules and regulations that we need to follow. We're far from being free men. How can we call ourselves free men by being observant Jews? Especially, right, if you think about Independence Day. So how do Americans celebrate their independence? Fireworks, barbecues, parades, songs, parties, beer, getting drunk, basically doing whatever they want, having a great time. And what do? On our Independence Day, our Independence Days, what do? We get on our knees, we scrub, we clean, we get to places, we clean our house like no cleaning lady has ever cleaned a house before. That's our Independence Day? Not only that, we can't eat whatever we want. We got to eat these stale crackers. No bread. How exactly is it that we're free and this is how we display our freedom? Ever thought of that? In addition, right, we say freedom. And how we ourselves as individuals, as humans, have to be in full control. And then we can call ourselves free men. So, where exactly does Hashem fall into this picture? We've been discussing of our own efforts, our own control. Where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu over here? We always define religious practices by including Hashem in them. Where does Hashem fall in this picture? So, Rabbi Twersky tells over a story of a man who toiled, worked very hard to clean and to scrub during the weeks leading up to Pesach. On one of the days of Chol HaMoed, he feels calm, he feels peaceful, feels like he did a great job and got rid of all the chametz. He goes to draw water from the well in his backyard, and he discovered that there's a piece of bread floating in the well. Shocked, immediately goes to visit his rabbi. He feels so guilty, feels like he's a failure. He goes to the tzaddik of the town. He says, I don't understand. I tried so hard. I put so much effort in. How can Hashem do this to me? How can Hashem allow for this to happen? And the tzaddik said to him, Hashem had not protected you from the sin of chametz. You know why? Because you had not prayed for His help. The halachot of Pesach are so complex and so strict and demanding that the tzaddik said to him, it's impossible to achieve perfection without divine intervention, without Hashem's help. And since you did not ask, you did not pray for Hashem's help, you did not get it. Whether in ridding our homes of chametz, whether ridding ourselves, getting rid of our own negative character traits, we must put in effort. Of course, we have to do self-introspection. We must get on our knees and scrub our homes, but also get on our knees and scrub our souls from all the averot that we have inside of us. Got to roll up our sleeves and do it. Get it done. Try really hard. However, we must always remember that without Hashem's help, we cannot succeed. This takes us to steps number 2 and 3 in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to read them to you. Step number 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now, these 12 steps were not founded, you know, in the Beit HaMikdash by rabbis, okay? They're Christian, they're Goyish. However, you see the importance of God and how God plays a role in these 12 steps. Number 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood it. In one of my classes in my master's program, I had a professor that was an atheist, openly. He was openly an atheist. And when he taught us about these 12 steps, what did he say? So I raised my hand and I asked a question. I said, hey, listen, so based on this, if anyone who is addicted to alcohol goes through this program, the 12-step program, and he's an atheist, not really going to go too well. Because you see God's mentioned, the name of God mentioned over here. And he said, no, that's not what God means over here. God means something greater than you. So it could mean medication. God could mean medication or your therapist. And I said, you're full of it. I didn't say that to him, but in my mind, I'm like, you're a clown. No, it doesn't mean that. God doesn't mean medication. God means God. So in life, we must display self-control. We must put in the efforts. But always remember that we need the help of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tefillah must be a part of overcoming our challenges. The Gemara in Brachot tells us that chametz equals the yetzer hara. The Gemara tells us that really, ultimately, a Jew wants to do God's will. But the yetzer hara is what causes us to sin. It affects us, it persuades us to do things that deep down we don't want to do. So you see over there, the Gemara equates chametz to the yetzer hara. Chametz, and how so? What's the analogy over here? Chametz, the difference between chametz and matzah is that chametz rises. Chametz rises, it elevates itself. Similar to a person who has an elevated ego, who rises, who thinks that he is in control, and there is no God that's in control, and it's only him. Haughtiness, or gava, when a person thinks that he is all that, and is in full control, that, my friends, is the beginning of his downfall. On the night of the Seder, the Ari HaKadosh, the Arizal, reveals to us that we have access to spiritual light on a level that doesn't exist any other time of the year, says the Arizal. And that we're able to take strides larger than we usually can. We're able to grow and take steps much greater than we're able to take during the year. As we explained before, chametz resembles the yetzer hara, and our maladaptive behaviors, our negative behaviors. The Sfarim say that the time of bedikat chametz and biur chametz, searching for chametz and burning, eradicating the chametz, destroying it, is an opportune time to do some soul searching and get rid of our negative character traits. It's a powerful Yom Tov. It's a powerful month. It's a month that we could attain our own freedom in miraculous ways. It's a month, the month of Nisan is a month in which we are kings. The month of Nisan, therefore, is referred to in the Torah as HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim. This month is unto you, Rosh Chodashim, as the head, as the first of all months. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, to you, this month to you, is Rosh Chodashim. The word Lachem, if you flip around the letters of the word Lachem, it spells out Melech. Because in this month we are kings. This month we have the ability to reach levels that we're not able to reach throughout the rest of the year. And it's all about our own self-control. Because what separates a slave from a free man is his ability to control himself. And in order to attain that control, in order to attain that freedom, we must put in the efforts, must not be in denial. put in the efforts, do some soul searching, but ultimately understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is above us, that could help us reach our own personal freedom. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great evening.